Blog Talk Radio.
And Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's our neighbor, Tony Pennicow.
And we have another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show coming your way tonight. We have no guest. No guest. Too much to talk about. We got Manny Pacquiao fighting this weekend. Of course.
Yeah, I've been spending a good part of my today working on an article for the fight this weekend. Hopefully, if I don't finish it tonight, I'll finish it tomorrow morning. But for our listeners out there, if you want to check it out, the full version should be available sometime tomorrow, where I'll break down the fighter's strengths, weaknesses, list of opponents, obviously their pre-priority. So it's not like I'm going out with some fighters that have never stepped in before. In fact, to make it easy on myself to avoid some typos, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll use a template for these previews from any previous I did. Well, this one I'm just using a template from last year's Pacquiao Marquez, so I don't have to worry about like replacing one of their names with somebody else. But to be honest, I'm a little concerned about Pacquiao, and I was talking to my dad about it today, and I think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I've seen a decline, not so much in his skills, but his mentality since he beat Cotto in fall of 2009. Since that, you know, he had to play with Joshua Clotty, and Clotty didn't want to fight, and Pacquiao really didn't, you know, pursue the knockout. He had the fight with Margarito, where, I mean, he was just completely annihilating him. And over the last two rounds, if you go back to the Cotto fight, when Pacquiao was 100 miles ahead on the scorecard and Cotto was a beaten fighter, Pacquiao went in for the knockout and he got it. Against Margarito, he pulled off the gas pedal. The Mosley fight, same thing. He wasn't beating Mosley as bad physically as he was beating Margarito, but he was definitely beating him, knocked Mosley down, he had him hurt. Mosley all but wanted to quit. They had to shove him out of the corner to keep fighting, and Pacquiao got off the gas pedal. Then we go to the Marquez fight from last year, and Pacquiao looked utterly human in that fight. And people say, well, maybe it's just because Marquez has this, maybe Marquez is Pacquiao's kryptonite. We did the Timothy Bradley fight, and as I said to my dad today, I, along with probably 99% of the people that watched that fight, thought Pacquiao won handily. I had him winning 11 rounds to 1. But here's the problem. He did not close the show, and he had a guy that had hurt his ankle early in the fight after he got wobbled, and I think it was a chance for Pacquiao to really press the issue, really go after him, and possibly, you know, force a stoppage or maybe even score a knockdown. Which would have ultimately won him the decision, and he did not do it. I think we're looking at a fighter right now who's become so disinterested the last few years. I think he knows the fight with Mayweather is not going to happen. And, I mean, now there could be a chance that, you know, he refires himself back up, because of the last two uninspiring performances. And plus, this is the guy that people said beat him last year. But right now, with his new focus on religion, with what he's doing in the political field in his native Philippines, I just think the guy really doesn't have his heart in it anymore. And actually, I'm going out on a limb here, and I'm thinking Marquez has that fire right now. He wants to get one of these four fights in the win column. He feels he's won all three of them.
He's supposed to love to drink his own piss.
I'm going out on a limb.
He's willing to drink his own piss.
The man is willing to drink his own piss, yes.
No ice cubes. We have a second comment on this, by the way. I think I'm getting a vision.
Yes, sir. I'm getting a vision on this one, too. And I am very much in agreement with you, Tony. I think that when you think about it, a lot of the pressure is going to be on Pac-Man this time, because a decision win is not really enough. You know, he's the pressure's on him to get that knockout. And it's a lot of times when you have to get a KO, look what happens.
Oh, absolutely. You're 100% right.
And I just can't see. You know, I would agree with you that the whole thing about the Bradley fight, of course, it was a ridiculous decision. But why wasn't it finished off? Why are these fights going on like this? Is it the outside influences? Is it the fact that maybe Pac-Man has peaked early? Maybe the fact that when we think about it, he is a natural in the one of 120-some pound division, really. I mean, he's 20 pounds more. Sure he's went up for it, and perhaps he's gained the weight correctly, but you got to wonder about this, because a man's bone structure can tell you a lot of times where you should be. So there's a whole ton of questions, enough to make it very intriguing. I mean, having said that, we still have, I mean, I would still feel that I just don't know if Marquez has the firepower to get Manny out of there. But as far as a decision, I mean, you've got to admit, all three of these fights have been close.
Absolutely. Now, and it's funny, with all three of these fights, that usually I have a guy that will always try to get, you know, pay-per-view fights if I feel they're worthy. And these two fighters I definitely feel are worthy. Well, these are three previous fights, and Saturday will make a fourth that I've been unavailable to get the pay-per-view. First time I was at a wedding, and at that time, I really hadn't watched a whole lot of Marquez. And I really was drinking a lot of Pacquiao Kool-Aid after I saw him in Pereira a few months prior to that. When I saw him against Pereira, he is going to smoke Marquez. And the guy in the chat room was like, are you out of your mind? He goes, you must be stupider, than you come off. He goes, because there's no way that Pereira is going to smoke him. And then in the first round, I almost looked like a genius. And then for the rest of the fight, I look like a moron. Well, that was the fight Pacquiao had him down three times early, and then the rest of the fight was mainly on Marquez's terms. But it was a draw. I know one guy that is adamant that Marquez won. I know other guys that are adamant based on the knockdowns Pacquiao won. Now, the second fight, I did not get to see it live, but that was the only fight of the three that I actually sat down and scored. That was the fight. I was down in Florida that weekend, and I checked the results on the internet. Then when I got home a week later, I watched it, and I scored it. And I had it 115-112 Pacquiao. 7 rounds to 5, and then the strength of the knockdown in the third round. Now, that was the fight I thought Marquez was actually hurt more than the first fight, because he went down from a shot pretty hard in the third round, right into a left hand, and then it was either that round or the following round, he got hit with a right hook at the bell, and he actually walked to a neutral corner. But once again, he came back. They fought pretty much on even terms, where that knockdown was pretty much the difference. The third fight, I never had a chance to see. I was working that weekend, as I will be this weekend. But I did read the reports, and a lot of people were saying, yeah, it's funny. I read a lot of conflicting reports. I have a gentleman that's he's a boxing trainer. He's very, very knowledgeable in the sport. And he was out there saying Pacquiao won the fight. He was more aggressive.
Hey, sorry about that, folks. You told me you were just talking about how aggressive Marquez was in the third fight.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you go back and you look at this, Marquez had, I thought, you know, like for the first fight was close. Pacquiao dominated the first round. Then for the next 11 rounds, Marquez, you know, got the better of the action. It was just, he was already down by 3 points. Their second fight I thought was pretty even, but Pacquiao legitimately won on my scorecards. And I know, like, I know people that have that third. Well, I have some people that say Marquez won all three. I have other people that disagree with that. Now, going back to the fight last year, that I was saying this right before we cut off, I had a couple gentlemen that are respected boxing trainers. And one of them, you know, he's a Brazilian kid, really knows his sport. And he came out there and he, you know, felt that, you know, Pacquiao won the fight. Another guy was, you know, the gentleman from the University of, or the Coast Guard Academy, I should say, Tom Burrell. Tom, who I know very well, well, he wrote on Facebook, they had a party over at the house for the fighters, and he watched it, and he came out there, and he adamantly said, you know, Pacquiao won that fight. I had other people saying, you know, it was, you know, definitely Marquez, 8 rounds to 4, easy. What Marquez did, and I think he's one of the few guys that's had success doing this, is he's gotten Pacquiao to the body. No, nobody, if you go back and watch a lot of his fights, the only guy that really had some success to the body without getting caught with counters, you know, Margarito had some shots, but every to the body, every time he'd get it, he got countered. Same thing with Cotto, same thing with Mosley. Every time they tried to body shot Pacquiao, he countered them. Marquez has been able to get to his body and not really get, he's been able to move him straight back, especially with the body punches. And I just have a feeling in this fight, this is going to be the one. I think they're both going to come to fight. You know, I just don't know how much Pacquiao really wants to fight anymore. You know, he's found religion. He's a politician now. The fight with Mayweather keeps, you know, never happening. And that'll weigh down on you mentally. You know, even when you're fighting full game fights, when you're fighting the Cotto's, the Margaritos, the Mosley's, the Marquez, full times of the world, but you're still eluding that brass ring of getting Floyd Mayweather and $50 million in the ring, and it keeps eluding you, then, you know, it wears down. And after a while, you're like, you know what? I ain't got to do this shit no more. I'm just going to retire on my legacy. Also, in another interesting circumstance is, you know, there's been accusations in the past few years, ever since he beat De La Hoya, of Pacquiao taking performance-enhancing drugs. Now, Buddy Roach, and I think we touched on this last week, has been accusing Marquez of taking some of the performance-enhancing drugs, which I just dismissed as, is urine really in a performance-enhancing drug?
Yeah, I don't know. I watched the third fight on British TV online, and that was live when I watched it, and I thought Marquez won. Then I watched the HBO broadcast taped, and I thought that Pacquiao won. Went back and forth.
You know, funny, and a lot of times, and this is a shame, you know, when you watch fights anymore on TV, you know, obviously, I mean, you need the commentators out there. You need the guys like the Jim Lampleys and Al Bernsteins of the world. Back in the day, you needed the Don Dunkeys and the Howard Cosells and, you know, all these legendary guys. So the only problem is, you know, whether they want to or not, it does influence the way you see a fight. Now, I know when I scored the second Pacquiao Marquez fight, I did that on mute. That was the one I had Pacquiao winning 115, 112. A lot of times, if I score a fight, I will, you know, watch it on mute because, you know, you're not going to be biased what the announcers are saying. And I'll give you a perfect example with a fight I attended in Philadelphia back in 2003. It was a rematch between David Tua and Haseem Rahman on the Bernard Hopkins, Murad Hakkar undercard. So we're in the arena. We were in the lower level. Good seats. And it was funny. A friend of mine, him and his father-in-law went to the fight with us. And he and I wagered a Twix bar. We wagered a Twix bar for work on Monday. And everybody in that arena saw Tua easily won that fight 89-4. Bloody whitewashed them. And I remember my friend Jamie turning to me saying, well, I guess I owe you a Twix bar when we get to work on Monday. And then they announced it as a split draw. One judge had Tua 116-112, another judge had Rahman 116-112, the third judge had it even 114-114. And the crowd booed like you wouldn't believe. And I remember walking out after the Hopkins fight for the main event, and people saying that was disgusting. And I'm talking about, people that were Rahman fans. They said, no way Tua won that fight. This is bullshit.
Did you have to, each buy a Twix bar and then, give each other one strip?
We actually did that. We actually each got a Twix bar and handed it to the other person. But the next day, I was watching a broadcast on HBO, and the announcers were going for Rahman. Hey, they're like, oh, Rahman's winning this fight. He's dominating Tua. And then I realized Rahman is a hard guy to watch, when you're at a fight, because a lot of his punches, he throws a lot of jabs, and a lot of them, there's so little distance between them that, he was laying the punches that none of us in the audience were seeing. And I really realized that when he fought James Toney. And I believe, once again, either that fight was a split decision and either it was a draw, or Toney might have won it. And I remember a neighbor of mine was at the fight, and he's like, Rahman won that fight. And we're like, no way. He was like, Toney won that fight easy. And on TV, we're like, no, we all thought Rahman won on TV, especially because the announcers were influencing it. Because a good announcer is going to see those in close, jabs that you're not going to see out in the audience. And especially if they're not snapping the guy's head back or, forcing him backwards. He was laying a punch that none of us in the audience saw.
Right. Well, yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see if Marquez comes out bombing this time, trying to get the knockout too. And Manny said that that's what he wants, so it's definitely going to be an interesting fight here coming up. I don't have the undercard right in front of me, but I can get it in a minute here on BoxRec. Did you know George Foreman was fighting this weekend? He's actually fighting tonight. He might have already fought down there in Naples.
Is that George Foreman, a.k.a. Monk?
Yes.
You saw up in Brockton?
Monk. He's 15-0 with 14 knockouts.
Yeah, when we saw up in Brockton, I didn't get a chance to go up because when we were walking out, and I saw him over there, kind of where the bleachers were. He's a big kid. He kind of looks like a young version of his father. When his father had hair and was a little, before he came back and was thicker around the middle, he looked like a 1972 lean version of his father.
Yeah, definitely.
Is George working his corner or have anything to do with his training? Do anyone know?
I don't know, but I would imagine.
So,
Olsen. guys hear me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey,
there we are.
Can I pose a question to both of you guys real quick? I'm on a chat room right now, and we're in the middle of a debate, and I'd like to get both your opinions on this, and I'll actually type it in. I'm on the Facebook page, KO Digest. I talk to them often. And right now they're doing a Time Machine Matchmaker, and they're putting Vladimir Klitschko in with a bunch of different guys. And one of the ones that I was sent and I've been commenting on is the 2012 version, the current version of Vladimir Klitschko versus the 1992 version of Riddick Bell. And how do you see that fight? How do you see that fight unfolding?
Oh man, I like Riddick Bell. But I don't know, Klitschko's pretty good. I think he, if you put him back in the day, he'd give Lennox Lewis a run for his money. That's the fight I want to see, Lennox Lewis versus Klitschko, both in their prime. I don't know.
What do you think, Tom? 1992 Riddick Bell versus the current Vladimir Klitschko?
Okay, now we are, this is before the Galata disasters, 92.
Absolutely.
And this,
the 92 Riddick Bell was the one that I had the first place holding
for. Right, and I think if we would see the Riddick Bell that we seen against Holyfield in the title-winning effort there, I'd have to go with him by decision. I don't think he would stop Klitschko, but I'll go with him by decision.
Okay. One of the things that I said here, and I have a few people, one guy said he agreed with me, so I was very happy about that. In fact, let me pull up my comment on it. And here's exactly what I said. Before he got lazy, Bell had all the tools to be an all-time great. You know, but he eventually got lazy and didn't want to train anymore, but I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to focus on the motivated Riddick Bell from 1992. Bell had all the tools to be an all-time great. Vlad's jab is thudding, but Bo's is snappy and quicker. Bell is a better inside fighter, and in my opinion, he has more confidence. I see Bo taking it right to Vlad and stopping him. I could see it happening anywhere between the fourth and seventh rounds. And I'm thinking about, you know, Vlad's chin that, you know, severely let him down in his loss to Corey Sanders. His stamina let him down in his losses to Lamont Brewster. And then early in his career, I believe it was, I can't remember the guy's name. His really eventual loss. And I can't remember the first guy that beat him. Not Ross Thompson, but it was, I think, Ross something.
Oh, Ross Purity, was it?
Yes, you're right, Ross Purity. Because Ross Purity fought the drill with Tommy Morris in that time, and then he stopped Vlad. I'm pretty sure it was him that stopped him. 11th round, because Vlad ran himself out of gas.
Yeah. Well, I think with the 212 version, he's a little smarter, but I understand, too, about the chin situation. You remember when he, why is my mind going blank here on the African fighter that had him in so much trouble back in 2006, I believe it was. You guys remember that one? Why am I going blank on his name? But, that could be an issue, but I just think Klitschko would be able to hold on. But, I agree with you, though, that my money would have to be on Bo.
Well, still looking for this. Yeah, Pacquiao fight. Well, the fight's on Saturday. There it is. Okay, so the cool main event, half of it is promoted by Snooki. Snooki Snooki, the Jersey Shore girl, Nicole Polizzi. And actually, I'm trying to get some questions out to her through a representative. I just got to write them up. So if you guys can think of any questions for
Okay, this is a tough assignment. Yeah.
Anyway, Javier Fortuna, featherweight, 20-0 with 15 knockouts, is going to be going against another undefeated fighter, who is promoted by Snooki and her father. They call him Papa Snooks. It's Patrick Highland. He's 27-0, 12 knockouts, and definitely tough guy. I think he's held some belts before. This is for the interim WBA World Featherweight title. It's a big fight there. Then we have the Coco main event at lightweight. Miguel Vasquez, 32-3 with 13 knockouts, fighting Mercito Gesta, 6-0 with one draw, 14 knockouts for the IBF lightweight title. Big fight
and
there.
And I got that answer for Tom. It was Samuel Peter.
Ah, thank you.
That makes sense.
I don't know why my mind went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember that. He actually threw down three times. He lost every round except for the three rounds he knocked him down in. And then when they fought a rematch back about 2 years ago, it was a mismatch. You know, Peter just came to collect a paycheck and take a beating. I don't think he even threw a right hand the whole fight.
Right, but I remember in their first one, Klitschko was he was drunk, hanging on just by the skin of his teeth, and it just seemed like another replay of the Corey Sanders disaster for him. But I don't know, maybe working with Emmanuel Stewart. I mean, there's only so much you can do for the chin, but maybe he's a little smarter. So, anyways, that would be my gut feeling on him today. I do think he would last, but hey, you could be right. Just too bad we don't have a time machine. We could do these matchups.
Right.
Just saying, fantasy dream fights, and I was taking two guys and I was matching them up, similar to what I'm doing, you know, for the Pacquiao Marquez fight. And then what eventually got me out of it was the fact that as much as I enjoyed doing it, part of the reason I enjoyed doing so much for an upcoming fight is that I could see how accurate I am. So when I go out there and say, okay, Jim Frazier is going to fight Mike Tyson, and here's how I feel it's going to go down, well, I'm never going to know. You know, I might go out there and say, yeah, Tyson's going to drop him about three times in the first two rounds, and every time Joe gets up, Mike's going to say, oh, shit. And then Mike's going to start backing up around the fourth round, and Joe's going to pick up steam, you know, around the 12th round, it's over, you know, and Joe's busting him up and taking him out. We can never say that for a fact. And that's kind of why I stopped writing the column.
Yeah, because it's just so frustrating, and you can go on and on and on and on and on and on. I've been down that road wasting months of my life, you know, on these debates, and finally it just got to the point I feel like you. We can go forever, and how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, you know? So it's fascinating to talk about, but got to keep it in perspective.
Get back to the Pacquiao fight. We have one more big fight on that card, and we're going to bring back an old classic after that. But we have Yuriorkis Gamboa, 21-0, with 16 knockouts at super featherweight, fighting Michael Farinas, who's 34-3-4, with 26 knockouts, fighting for the interim WBA World Super Featherweight title. Say that 20 times fast.
That may be the fight of the night. That's intriguing.
Yeah. That's a lot of knockouts Farinas had there. Three losses.
Yeah.
Ugh, tough fight there for Gamboa. But those are all 12-round fights. And then we have a 8-round featherweight fight. And we used to do this when we went through the Box Rec records every week. We'd pick a Jesus fight of the week. So this is the Jesus fight of the week because Jesus Lula is the first 8-round featherweight fight on the undercard here. And he's fighting another guy with a kind of a weird name, Doty Boy Penalosa Jr. Jesus Lula is 6-4 with one knockout win, and Doty Boy Penalosa is 9-0, all nine wins by knockout. So good luck, Jesus. And we definitely have to talk about the big UFC counter programming going on same night as the Manny Pacquiao fight, because we have some very intriguing fights there. Ben Henderson, famous for tearing apart Frankie Edgar, two straight fights there, 17-2. He's fighting Nate Diaz, who's 16-7. But Nate's looking pretty good lately, so I think there's going to be a little war. I think it'll go all five rounds. And
you know,
I think Nate has a real good shot here, but I like Henderson's style at the same time. I think he's going to keep improving.
Well, see, here's what I'm flashing back on this one. Now, as far as submission skills, I would go with Nate, and I think as far as just pure boxing skills, I would go with Nate. The problem is, if you can look back on how McDonald was able to just manhandle Nate with physicality, if you remember that fight, when, I mean, he was just throwing him around almost, it was almost like one of those, the dad's taking on his teenage son and showing him how much stronger he is. And I just question how Nate is going to deal with that physicality that Henderson's capable of bringing. So that's why we fight, I guess. But I would go with Ben slightly just based on that. I mean, I think Nate's a better finisher, but I just don't think it's going to come into play.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one for him. But it's a big opportunity, and he has the talent. It's just, is it going to be his day? We don't know.
Yeah, and as we say in boxing about the big punch, the eraser, on the ground, he has the submission skills to catch Ben. I mean, Ben is not uncatchable. No one is with Nate, but we'll just see how he reacts, because in that McDonald fight, Nate was just thrown out of his game plan so much when you're being picked up, slammed, thrown down, thrown up against the cage, and we'll see if he's learned from that.
Big fight, the co-main event. It actually should be McDonald versus Penn, but the co-main event listed here. We got Mauricio Hua, 21-6, versus Alexander Gustafsson, 14-1 there. And Gustafsson's been talking tough, talking about wanting to show Jones what's up. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him, but it's a good test.
I would just have a thing about, let's never look beyond the fight in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just something about that I've just seen this go so wrong so many times in my many decades of seeing this stuff. But this one, my heart's with Hua, but my head's with the younger lion. I think that stylistic-wise, I think Hua's lost a bit of speed. And, you know, Hua is, I believe, 30 years old, I think. Pretty sure he's 30. Chronologically, but if you look at some of these wars he's been in, how old is he really?
You know, his war age is 92.
Yeah, I mean, that's because, you know, again, we know that you can't judge a fighter's age by his date of birth. You look at the battles he's been in, all of the wars. I won't even call them battles. I mean, not just the Jones beatdown either, but the Henderson fight, and just going back. I mean, and I've been a fan of his since the Pride days. I just love the guy, but I just think that with the style and this, you know, Alexander's got this style where he's kind of like that herky jerky. It would be hard to train for a guy like that. Another one that, you know, it's hard to mimic his style. So I don't know if he'll stop him. I sure hope he doesn't. But hey, the best man will win.
And he does represent one of those guys that we might see give John Jones a run for his money, but I wouldn't be saying that I was going to beat him right away until they tell you you're going to fight him. Anyway, Rory McDonald coming to fight BJ Penn, who's coming out of retirement. And these guys have been doing the voluntary anti-doping tests, and they've been talking a lot of trash back and forth. His headline I saw today was Rory McDonald saying that he wants to hurt BJ Penn, physically hurt him. So I know that's kind of what's going to happen usually in a fight anyway. But so Sometimes, you know, guys have enough class to say, oh, I hope everybody's safe at the end. But McDonald's like, yeah, I'm gonna hurt him and put him in the hospital.
I don't know what the bad blood is there. I haven't really delved into it, you know, to see just what would cause that kind of reaction. But, you know, here again we have the young lion and then the old warrior. My take on this one, so much depends on BJ's conditioning because, you know, we always hear how great a shape he's in, but I really think that since he's not really working with Marv Marinovich like he was, and you remember he always had cardio issues, and then he hired Marv Marinovich as his trainer, and he out-cardioed or lasted with Diego Sanchez and Kenny Florian, you know, two cardio machines. And then it seems like he ran into a few snags, and now he's back at 170, which makes the cardio issue even bigger than it was at 155. And I think that's going to be a challenge. I think the longer it goes, the worse for BJ. So, I mean, if he's going to catch him, I think we better see something pretty quick. And if McDonald is really serious about wanting to smash him and gets off his discipline and just makes a very aggressive charge early on, that may play into BJ's favor because supposedly his boxing's really looked pretty good, and we know what his jiu-jitsu skills are. So we'll see. But having said that, I think youth will be served.
McDonald comes in 13-1. Penn comes in 16-8-2. I think we're going to see a repeat of the Ricky Hatton situation. Ben's going to come back with all his experience, look good, but he's going to lose, and he's going to lose badly enough to just say never again. But, you know, the fan in me of BJ Penn says that he has a shot to beat McDonald. McDonald's just too young, too fast rising, too just abominable, I guess, 13-1
well,
record.
Yeah, and I think with McDonald, he's one of these new generation guys that has just started off in MMA, and he's 23, but he has 10 years training strictly MMA. I mean, he didn't come from a wrestling background, to my knowledge, or he didn't come from a karate background or a boxing background or a kickboxing background or a jiu-jitsu background. He just started right from scratch. And when I evaluate a fighter, I always look for weaknesses. What's the downside? And in McDonald, it's hard to see any. So BJ's going to have his hands full. Like I said, I'll stick with what I said. I think if he can catch him early, the first round would be his best chance. But as we go on, it's going to be,
we
yeah,
have,
I think it's a long night.
We have Mike Swick versus Matt Brown. Both of them have 15 wins. Brown has 11 losses. Swick has 4. I really like Swick in this one. I think he's got the experience factor. He's well rested. We know that. He hasn't fought in a while, but Matt Brown's a tough little cat. He keeps fighting, and when he wins, he just dominates. But I don't know. I think Swick is a little more crafty than he can take.
Yeah, and not only that, I think Matt's been a bit inconsistent in the past. It seems like you said, when he's on, he's very dominant, but there's been too many times that he is close but no cigar. So we could say that maybe he knows that this is a fight he really can't lose, but it might not make any difference.
Then we have versus Eve Edwards, who's 41-18-1. And that's been a decent fight here. I'm surprised that these guys haven't fought already, but who knows why that is. Maybe they have. But I haven't looked at their records to find out. And we have Mike Easton, 13-1, versus Rafael Assuncao. I heard this week that one of these fights had to be canceled. Maybe he has an illness. I don't see that on here anymore. Everybody hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I Anyway, this is another UFC on Fox card. Big deal. We'll see if that works out for them. See if they get the ratings. Our guy on the Ultimate Fighter didn't do so well last week. He lost his fight. Joey Rivera, the guy we interviewed not too long ago. It was a pretty decent fight. He just couldn't use his strengths. And it's starting to really show that a lot of these guys are fighting to survive the tournament. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say about Joey's fight, I wouldn't scream too loud about the decision, but having said that, it wouldn't have been disastrous to see a third round.
Right.
But, again, the whole cliche, don't leave it in the hands of the judges, but... you know, Dana's commentary after the fight about Joey looked like he was on, what did he say? Zanax or something?
No, that's
Forrest
Griffin.
Yeah.
Griffin.
You know, but I mean, and Joey, though, I will say he really gave a good interview afterwards. He assumed full responsibility for it and said, hey, I just couldn't get off, just didn't give it all I had, and well, hopefully we can get him back on and talk a little more about it. Because I understand how hard it is, but, you know, you'd have to think, even if you know someone and you train with them, you put that friendship aside for 10, 15 minutes and go in there and keep your eye on the prize.
I couldn't figure out. I mean, you're talking about a show that's struggling with the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about two coaches who are not very outgoing people. They're very soft-spoken big dudes, you know. Roy, Big Country Nelson is like, he's kind of obnoxious, but he's not really like, you know, running for the cameras. You know, they come to him and he just says what's on his mind. But I mean, these guys are not really that great spokesmen for the league. And then you have all these guys come in, and you know, they're just. They're trying to fight for whatever reason, you know, to get this contract or to get the money or to get a, you know, a fight in the UFC, whatever their reasoning is. You know, these guys are coming in and they have to get through all these fights to get to the finale, to get to that final fight. So they're saving it all for the end, I think. And, you know, they're just trying to cruise through their first couple of fights after they fight to get in the house in the first place. And you see these guys, they're banged up for some of these fights going in. And
yeah. What
I couldn't figure out is in all these past seasons, they had opposite teams. You know, the big thing was who was going to win the team thing, who had more team guys in there. And this year, the final four, you had two from Team Yellow and two from Team Blue. And they made them fight each other? Why?
Yeah.
Why mix the teams up, you know?
Yeah.
It just makes sense that they did it that way for whatever reason. You know, so we don't know who wins the team battle.
Well, but now let's see. With the Canadians, I know that Ricci was on Shane. Yeah, so now they were different, weren't they? They were on different teams, right?
No, I think they were on the same team, too.
Okay, Michael Hill was on Shane's team also. Okay, because I can't remember, but...
Maybe, I know. I don't know. Maybe that's why they did it. I thought both guys were on.
I mean, I could kind of understand this whole feud mm-hmm. sort of getting out of control, but you're right. The rest of it, you remember those early days, it was all about the team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
like,
you know, especially when you
back.
Had coaches that legitimately hated each other and got in each other's faces.
Yeah, you wouldn't be talking about Ortiz and Shamrock, would you? that had to be the best. You know, Ortiz's famous comment. You know, Shamrock's just so out of his mind that anything I say to him is going to drive him nuts. Keep talking, you monkey. I'll beat your hair black or something.
To finish off the UFC on Fox 5 fights, probably the preliminary Facebook or FX fights here. We got Ramzi Nijem who's 6-2 versus Joe Proctor, who's 8-1. Both of those guys from the Ultimate Fighter series. We got Henry Martinez 9-2 versus Darren Cruikshank 11-2. Another Ultimate Fighter dude, Nam Phan, who's 18-10, fighting Dennis Seaver, 20-8. We talked about that fight last week, I believe. We got Scott Jorgensen, 13-6, versus John Albert, 7-3. And that's it. That rounds it out. Oh, wait. Tim Means, 18-3, with one draw, versus Abel Trujillo is the last fight. And back to boxing for Tony. Rob,
okay.
We have to discuss Miguel Cotto's first promoted fight and his first loss at Madison Square Garden. What happened there, Tony? Did you get to see that one?
Actually, I did not. I was working on Saturday, and by the time I got home, I was hoping to be able to get home in time. I walked in with 2.5 minutes left in the 12th round. And from what I heard, the decision was just a little bit wider than expected, especially in Madison Square Garden with a throng full of very faithful Puerto Rican fans supporting Cotto. But Austin Trout did a very good job. He's a tall, lanky boxer. He's got a lot of good skills to him. And he boxed well. I was a little annoyed with the post-fight interview process. You could tell Cotto did not really want to answer the questions, and they were still, kind of really in his face with him. And it's like, are you going to fight again? He's like, I don't know, probably. And then they kept pushing away, and he just walked away. That is why he's merchant for you sometimes. He does get a little bit in your face. But, from what I see from the last round, from a little bit that I did see, Austin Trout boxed very well. He was laying in that long left hand and a couple of right hooks, and he did shake Cotto with one of the right hooks. You got a good player in that division right there. Especially the fact that, he's tall. He's got good reach, good range. He's gonna be a handful to some of these guys.
Well,
and I know Cotto's face afterwards looked like I didn't see the fight, but Cotto afterwards looked pretty bad. But I would wonder when we're gonna have in the name of decency, when announcers and reporters can stop asking a beaten fighter, is this it? Are you going to quit? I mean, come on. Give him a little time to think about it, Jeez. And it seems that we're seeing that sickening trend more and more. And, I mean, to me, it's just you can't ask someone that's in an emotional state like that what they're going to do. I don't think. I mean, I don't know. You guys weigh on it, but it just annoys
me. Yeah, I got really upset one time when Max Kellerman, in the middle of the fight, went over to the guy's corner and asked him if they're going to stop the fight.
Yeah.
And the guy wasn't even doing that bad. He's going over and trying to influence the fight, basically. Telling him, hey, maybe you should stop the fight. That's going a little too far, isn't it?
I mean, the first thing I would say if I'm in the corner, oh, how much money do you have bet on the other guy? Come on, that sounds terrible.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the commentator's job is to not make these kind of judgments. You report on what's going on, go from there, and stuff like that. I was just so wrong asking someone that, I think. I don't know, maybe I overreact to it, but.
Well, the experts, of course, slammed them. And I think there was one article that said, stick to one or the other, promoting or fighting. You can't do both. But I don't know. I know that Roy Jones Jr. has done it. He's done both for a little while. He's done all right with it. I don't know if he's still got any fights on the horizon, but we'll see. I think he had something going on in Jamaica with Kimbo, I believe, but I think that's an exhibition.
Boy, what a freak.
I look at this with regards to, fighting on your own promotional cards. It's too much. You really got to Because when you're doing that, what do you got to focus on? You got to focus on all the little things about the card, making sure all the fighters get paid, making sure that, you know, you have all the guys on the weight. You have the matchmaker for a lot of those things, too. But you're the one that ultimately comes down to. You know, you got to make sure that everything is running well with the promotion. You got to make sure that the promotion is being, that's what, promoted. And, you know, a lot of like little things there. When you're the fighter, you really should be concentrating on the fight. You know, especially if you're in one of the higher echelon fights. You know, I mean, you got a world-class guy in front of you. You know, you don't want to have to be worrying about, oh, well, you know, how many rows have we got set up for the press? You know, you really got to focus on, you know,
the I'm sure you're for that.
Oh, yeah, true. But ultimately, it is your name on the promotional thing.
Right.
Right?
Well, he definitely didn't pick a pushover opponent, and he paid for it, I think. But I think it also just kind of shows that, you know, it's just all about the name sometimes. He's got a big name, and he's starting to sell his name, even though maybe it is hasty for people to say, oh, are you going to quit? You know, he is the type of guy that has taken a lot of punishment in those last few fights. And maybe you ought to think about it if he takes another beating like that, definitely. But maybe you ought to think about it just going over to promotional side full-time. Save himself for the older years.
I would agree with that, but I think let's give him a little time to make up his mind. But if he does want one more big payday, what do you guys see for him?
I don't know who's going to want to fight him. That's the thing, like, you know. After there's a couple losses like that, who's going to want to fight him? And what are you going to prove by beating him?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Well, speaking of promotional stuff, I did want to mention. Go ahead, Tony.
To make it even more complicated, you know, I mean, he's still a very dangerous opponent. So you can sit there and say, you know, hey, I'm going to take this fight. Hey, Miguel Cotto is a possible opponent. Then you get the two trains of thought. Well, how much my reputation is going to be, you know, helped by beating them? And then, so it's like, well, it could be a really situation where it's high risk and low reward. If he gets written off by a lot of people, then okay, he's past his prime. But he's a very player. He's a player that's very dangerous past his prime. He's a, you know, a heavy puncher, a heavy body puncher, which, you know, takes a lot out of you and can really, you know, bust you up for a long time. You know, to fight, you know, you're going to be taking a hell of a lot of risk for what potentially is a minimal reward. Now, granted, he does still have, you know, a significant name to him. But you're right, there would be very little benefit to risk yourself against a guy like him.
Wow. Talking about promotional side of things, we got to talk a little bit about 50 Cent. He's making a lot of waves. He's making a lot of news in the rap circles in the music industry for his foray here into boxing. But he's been interviewed by a couple different sites. There's one that's more recent, but this one from the last week, he talks about the situation with Mayweather. The interviewer asked him at the has the start of your promotional company affected your relationship with Floyd? And he says, not from my perspective, because Gamboa is obviously an asset with or without Floyd Mayweather. I don't actually have these intentions of doing this venture on my own, or I didn't actually have these intentions of doing this venture on my own, but he hasn't done anything to me, as in Floyd. I'm more upset about Coran, Floyd's son, breaking his arm, and Floyd not actually calling or texting me to tell me himself. His son hurt himself bad, and he didn't actually call to tell me. For me to find out from somebody else is what makes me upset with him right now. The other stuff is not really that bad.
Trouble in paradise, huh?
Right. Mm. So the interviewer asked, so there hasn't been a lot of communication between you and him. When was the last time you guys spoke? 50 says, we haven't spoken to him in a while, but when that happens, when your son gets hurt, he should call me. I don't know what kind of relationship he has with the son, but I guess it's pretty tight. He's upset. Guy didn't call him when he broke his arm. Interviewer says, what problems do you see in the boxing landscape right now, and how do you want to go about fixing them? 50 says, what I see is the actual promoters are afraid. They're excited about the accolades of their fighters having titles, and they're afraid to fight the tough fights. This is what slows boxing down from those other platforms where one promoter is over all the fighters. They can make the matchups you need immediately to keep the actual platform exciting and thriving. In boxing, you've got promoters hiding their fighters from. You run into that right away, and when you actually attempt to create a matchup for Gamboa. So, he's also come out in an article on boxingscene.com. Saying you got a lot of promoters who won't fight their fighters against certain fighters. What you run into when you got the type of talent that Gamboa possesses, people start the conversations and then pull out when they realize it's Gamboa. They don't want to lose the titles that their fighters have and they feel that they're going to earn more with the fighter fighting weaker opponents for longer periods. And that's where boxing doesn't have what the UFC has. The UFC having all those fighters be under one promoter's umbrella, a lot of them will make the matchup when the general public wants it versus having to go through these hassles and having the promoter's personal assessment of each other prevents great fights from happening. I think he's learning quickly.
Well, identifying the problem is step one, but then step two is what's the solution? And I've been hearing about problems for so long, I'm out of patience. We all know the problems. Solutions.
So, what's 50 Cent's take on things? If he had his money and Floyd's money like they intended to do going into this thing, I think they could make waves. But, he's only got half that money now, his money. So we'll see. We'll see what he can do. He does have a couple good guys under contract. But he's not gonna explode on the scene overnight. I don't think he's going to be sporting Don King hair come this time next week. We'll see. But it's interesting, for sure. I did mention earlier, too, that George Foreman is fighting this weekend. Actually, tonight in Mexico. I didn't tell you who he's fighting. 15-0, 14 knockouts. And he's fighting David Ferraz, who's 1-2. He's been knocked out twice.
Uh-oh. Now, what weight division
heavy.
Is George in? Okay.
Six-rounder. I think it's time he's had a little step up there.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Let's see what else we got for big news. Heard all about 50 Cent. Before I forget, I did want to mention there was some breaking news earlier today that they have found another opponent for Ronda Rousey for UFC 157. She is going to be headlining the first show of the UFC with females involved against Liz Carmouche. Who was not on the radar, I don't think, for anybody wondering who is she going to fight next. Because the rumor was, or the story was, when it came out that they're going to bring women into the UFC after Strikeforce collapsing, was that they brought in Miesha Tate, too. So, why isn't she fighting Miesha Tate?
Yeah, and while we're on this topic, apparently Chris Cyborg has expressed a willingness to actually drop the weight. Now, whether she will or not, I don't know, but there's still talk about that, see where that ends up.
Well, she still has to serve the rest of her suspension.
Yeah.
Sign some kind of contract with the UFC.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure they would be willing to do. Now that they're going to officially make women accessible to the UFC there, then they're going to have to come up with a division. So they're going to need every woman they can get. We'll see. happen. Maybe they'll acquire another league like Invicta. I did hear Dana White say that was the last of their acquisitions, Strikeforce, so we'll see if they change their mind. But I think they're going to have to do something. They're definitely going to have to start signing more women fighters. But Liz Carmouche is pretty tough. I think I've definitely seen her fight once or twice. She's a tough cookie, and I don't think Ronda Rousey's fought her before, so it's a different look for her. We'll see. Just don't get yourself caught in an armbar, Liz. She likes those. And speaking of UFC, we have a super fight talk between UFC middleweight champion Anderson Silva and UFC welterweight King George St. Pierre. Well, all the parties involved are discussing this bout, and Mike Straka supposedly revealed on the MMA beat that a source close to St. Pierre told him the welterweight champion will be asking for an enormous amount of money to take the fight against Silva. And Straka said, I was told by somebody very close to George that George makes close to $8 million a fight. So to fight Anderson Silva, he's going to ask for $50 million. Now, I don't know where this number comes from, but $8 million a fight.
See, now, did you say 50 or 15?
50.
50. 50. 50. 50. 50. 50, yes. Woo! Okay.
Now, I don't know where this comes from, because I've never heard of a fighter in the UFC making more than $1 million a fight. Never.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
And, the last guy I heard anything close to that was Brock Lesnar, and he made $400,000 a fight.
Yeah.
So to think that George is making $8 million a fight, it cannot be on UFC base pay alone.
No, I wouldn't think so. And if he's asking 50, 50, you know the old cliche, I really don't want this. I don't want to do this, so I'll price myself out of it. But coincidentally, Dana just broke the news, and I didn't read the whole story, but he's insisting that GSP will be fighting Nick Diaz next.
Really?
I just caught that about an hour before we came on, but I didn't get the whole. But that's supposedly what Dana.
There's no downside there. There's no downside there for Peterson.
Yeah. So I mean, 50 million. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
I don't think he wants to fight Silva.
No. No, I don't, and there would just be so many issues there. As far as this, would Silva have to go down to 170? Are we going to do a catch weight? Or is Silva going to stay at 185? I'm not that thrilled about it. I want to see Anderson move up and go with Jones, but that's a whole other story.
The other thing here too is there's something that came out this week. The folks over at MMA Manifesto have actually tabulated the announced career earnings of every UFC fighter since UFC 46 in 2004. So this is just coincidentally enough the next story here with the list in my story list. We just were talking about the $8 million of George St. Pierre. But there's no way he can be making $8 million a fight, because this list has him at number 5, and his total career earnings are $3,102,000. So, definitely not. Guess who number 1 is, career earnings, UFC?
This is interesting. I know Liddell's had quite a few, had a long career. I'm off on that though, aren't I? You're not responding.
Is that your final answer?
my crystal ball is flashing here.
definitely in the right track. It's Chuck Liddell. He's made $4,320,000.
So my crystal ball was on the money. Okay.
Exactly. Just over Tito Ortiz, who made $4,075,000. Number three is Quentin Jackson, $3,240,000. I'm surprised at Michael Bisping, $3,135,000. Will not expect to see him up there, but he's up there. Randy Couture comes in at number six. We already said George St. Pierre is number five. Couture is $3,045,000. Then we have Anderson Silva has made $2,871,000. Brock Lesnar, I mentioned earlier, for a very short career, made a lot of money in the UFC. $2,825,000. It's number eight in the all-time list. That's pretty good. And we had Rashad Evans, $2,697,000. He comes in at number nine. And fighting this weekend at number 10, BJ Penn, $2,650,000. Huh. So no way that GSP makes $8 million fighting. Of course, that's not, you know, a foolproof list of their income either. So if he does make $8 million a fight, a lot of that's got to be his sponsors. I would think they throw in a lot of money because he's probably got some really big name sponsors. But that's just my guess. I don't know all his sponsors offhand. But does anybody else have any big earth-shattering news in the sports, combat sports world here?
I did tumble onto a little bit of boxing history, and this is I've known about this story for years, but stumbled onto it in Yahoo, of all places, that apparently back in the mid-60s, Jim Brown, who was, I think he was in his, I think he retired from Cleveland Browns in 65, the running back, the great all-star Hall of Fame running back. And Jim Brown got to know Muhammad Ali a bit, and he decided he'd like to go a few rounds with the champ. It would be supposedly an easy payday. Now, to back up a bit, Jim Brown was, I mean, I know he was long before you guys' time, but you can see him on YouTube. I mean, he was just, he was, to me, he was everything.
He was actually known for punching people in the chest. That
He was a monster. I mean, to me, he was what a running back is supposed to do, run people over. Now, I appreciate the finesse guys. But Jim Brown, I mean, you'd see, because I remember him as a kid. He played for Cleveland. I remember watching him, and he'd move the pile. I mean, you'd see three or four guys on him, and a whole, you couldn't even see Jim Brown. I mean, the guy was just a monster. And supposedly, he was the greatest lacrosse player ever. Now, I don't know if any other lacrosse players, I don't know if they have a lacrosse Hall of Fame, but supposedly, he had the athletic credentials. So when Muhammad heard about this, he said, "Oh, really? Jimmy said that, huh?" He says, "Well, bring him around." So they come around, and they start a little sparring session. So Brown's going at it. I guess it's about 30 seconds, and Brown's swinging these big haymakers, and he can't get anywhere near Ali, of course. This is, you know, we're talking prime time Muhammad. So then Ali stopped, gave him a lightning-fast 1-2 combination, and Brown just stopped immediately and says, "Okay, I get it." and that put an end to Jim Brown's boxing aspirations pretty quick. You know. And in fact, you know, I had talked to Terry Daniels. I trained with his brother, Denny. And Terry after Joe Frazier beat Ali the first time back in March of 71, and then Joe took the year off, and Terry Daniels was Joe's first title defense, January 72. And Terry was maybe like a top 20 guy. You know, Joe needed not a real challenging fight after the Ali fight, but Terry had been in with about everyone, and the summer before that, he fought an exhibition with Ali, and so I was able to talk to him about it, and he said that two jabs from Ali came at him quicker than any one jab from anyone. And this was just an exhibition, so can only imagine the hand speed that Muhammad Ali had. So that's tonight's bedtime story and history lesson.
Awesome. Well, do you have anything, Tony? Any big fights coming up to get us we forgot about?
Well, I was actually going to just kind of elaborate on something Tom was saying. you know, talking about, you know, a prime time Muhammad Ali and just how exceptionally fast that was. One of the things that I always tell some of my guys, you know, when I'm working out with them in training and stuff, one of the things I always focus on is when we start really working on defense and catching punches and slipping punches is put the headgear on, put the mouthpiece in, and then, you know, and this is the way they trained me. They put me back in a corner, and they had a guy just throwing jabs at my head, right at my forehead, right where the ringside logo was on my headgear. He showed if the punch got through, where you're hitting the guy on a padded forehead, so you're not hitting him in the nose, hitting him in the mouth, and making him get gun-shy. And then you were learning, because, like, I remember my first sparring session, and the guy threw, like, as soon as the bell rang, he threw, like, a double jab right hand, left hook, and I was like, it literally, I never saw any of them coming. They bounced literally off my face. And I was like, oh, shit, where the hell that come from? And that's why when they brought me in, they said, you got to learn how to see the punches coming at you. Learn how to see them, catch them, react to them. And if you learn, things will slow down for you. They always say about a quarterback playing football, when he starts to get experience, the game is slowing down for him. He's getting better. He's seeing things now. And that's the one thing I always train to anybody, whether they're young adults, teenagers, people my age, older, it doesn't matter. And always talking to my one friend, Mike. He's been probably my best friend since second grade. And I always tell him, you know, with you guys, and I said, I'll get in there and, you know, mix it up with you guys anytime you want over at the gym. I said, just the one thing you got to remember is to a trained boxer with experience, I am average speed at best. At best. But to an untrained boxer, I am fucking grease lightning. I remember sparring with some inexperienced guys over at this one fitness center. And I remember the owner of the gym came over to me. He goes, yeah, man. He goes, man, Dave was just so wild being in there with you. And I'm like, oh, really? He goes, he said he could not believe a human being could be so fast. And he's talking about me. Yeah, he said, you're lightning in there. I said, no, I'm not. I'm average as well. Imagine if he was in there with a guy that was really fast. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah. And like this article was saying, that Jim Brown was such a great athlete, and maybe he could have competed quite well against Ali in anything but this. But this
exactly.
Is what Ali did, and he was at the top of the game. And
Jim Brown to come out of retirement.
Yeah.
You look at it this way, Jim Brown was a phenomenal athlete, as was Ali. Now, they might have been, now, if you put Ali in shoulder pads and cleats, you're right. Jim Brown annihilates them.
Yeah.
And you put them in gloves, in trunks, it's vice versa. The only maybe equal footing they might have been maybe on the baseball diamond or the basketball court.
Yeah.
I always joke on, about 2 years ago, at the Tremont that I work at now, we had one guy there. We got rid of him because he was more like a cancer to the rest of us. And the guy was an asshole. You know, he was bigger than I was, and he had taken some, some type of martial art. And then he'd be sitting there talking like, oh, my master tells me this, and blah, 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 blah. And no boxer could ever take down a martial artist. And he was a little bit offensive with what he was saying, you know. And I'm like, listen, buddy, first of all, yeah, you're right. I might be a boxer, but don't think I didn't come from the streets, number one. And then second of all, he's like, well, this and that, and, you know, one day maybe we'll have to spar a little bit, and we'll have to do whatever. I said, all right, I'll make a deal with you. We'll go, you know, your way first. We'll go with the whatever martial art you're taking. But then we put the gloves on. But that's not fair, you know, whatever. Because I fight in the gym. I said, oh. So basically, you're cool if I fight in your environment, but you're afraid to fight me in mine. And then you say, and my one friend's like, you know, for all the shit he's talking, he's never sparred once.
Well,
yeah, but, right, you know, I mean,
next time he challenges, you say, all right, let's do it. We're gonna soak our wrist wraps, hand wraps, and glue, and put some glass on them. We're gonna go.
That to me is the weakness of traditional martial arts, because, you know, that old saying, everyone has a plan until they get hit. And I think if you've been in both worlds, that there are, and I'm not saying that there aren't some tough guys in you know, regular karate, taekwondo, kung fu and stuff, but you can reach high levels in those arts without really going through the ringer. Now, contrast that with the boxing gym. Now, you're going to go into a boxing gym, and maybe, I guess, every trainer would look at you different, but eventually you're going to have to get in there and start sparring, and you're going to find out real quick if this is for you. And it's the same thing in an MMA atmosphere. Eventually, you're going to be in, and you're going to find out, just you're going to get a gut check. And then at that point, and I've seen guys in those environments just, okay, this ain't for me. And that's cool, because it ain't for everyone. But the problem is with the traditional arts, you can get these, the master says this technique will work. Well, how do you know? I mean, do you really rip someone's throat out in training all the time? I don't think so. And that's the problem. I don't mean to be this disrespectful to them, but I got to call what I see, because I've been in all these different environments. And a lot of these guys don't have a clue how hard boxers can hit. They just don't, because they haven't been in that environment. And they do some of this point fighting, and they get these bad habits, and all of a sudden, one good punch, and the fight's over. And I've seen that happen, too.
And just like you were saying 2 minutes ago, you don't realize how fast a lot of them are. And like
right.
I said, and when I mean fast, I mean, basically, if you look at any type of street fight out there, or any type of guys that are fighting that don't know how to fight, everything they do is wide, and 80% of them aren't punching. So they
right.
try to grab you with one hand, and throw these little cheap punches with the other, or they're going to try to take these big, wide haymakers. Where, you know, a traditional fighter is going to see that a mile away and hit you with three-punch combination before your hand even gets to within 2 feet of the guy.
Right. And then we're also remember this, too, that if you're really doing a lot of boxing training, your cardio is going to be far better than the average guy you're going to
Absolutely.
Encounter. And that includes a lot of guys coming out of these traditional-style dojos. I'm not mixing that up with MMA. That's a whole other, you know, that's apples and oranges. But I'm talking about a lot of these guys that are just straight-up traditional arts that seem to think that they have all the secrets, and they never fight, and their style's too deadly. You know, I've heard all this stuff.
Kind of reminds me of the whole little deal with Randy Couture and Steven Seagal. I don't know if you heard that. That's been in the news this week. It was kind of a little stupid feud, but... Apparently, Randy Couture said he wouldn't come out of retirement unless Steven Seagal was available to fight. So, got back to Seagal, and he was kind of confused about it, but he was kind of like, had his feelings hurt too. So he said, "Yeah, I'll fight Randy Couture anytime for free at any location that he wants in private."
What do you mean in private? I mean, don't you want to show your skills off in front of the whole world in private? What do you mean in private?
I guess not. It's just...
Oh, come on. Yeah, I know. Let me finish the statement here, because my skills are so deadly that I can't employ them in the octagon. Right. Okay, good night. Whatever.
Of course, Couture laughed it off, so it was kind of a non-story for me, but... One story I forgot to mention. Josh Barnett got himself a fight on the January 12th final Strikeforce card, which is interesting because the Barnett's UFC experience has not been very positive. So you'd think, you know, some of these guys on this last card are sort of auditioning for the UFC. But they put him in against a tough guy, so maybe they are trying to really show that he doesn't belong in the UFC or something by getting this guy to kick his ass. But this dude, they're putting him up against Nandor Guelmino, and he's 11-3, and he's making his United States debut after being on the European circuit, and he's won 7 straight fights, finishing over half his victims by way of submission.
Where is he from, this Dan Lord fellow?
Austria, I believe. Austria.
How interesting.
Austria. Well, good day, mate. Let's put another shrimp on the body.
Nandor is the name.
Okay, interesting.
So, I think that's about it for us. We only got 15 minutes left anyway, but next week we will definitely have a high-quality guest of some variety. I don't think it's going to be Snooki, but we might get her to answer some questions.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. I definitely want to try to get back to having 2 guests a show at some point. But
yeah, and if there's a chance, Rich, if you can give us a heads up on that. I mean, I know sometimes it doesn't gel till the last, you know.
Yeah, try to get Frank Shamrock to explain to us what the fuck happened to Strikeforce, but
if it's a well-known guy, I can go right off the top of my head for hours. But if it's someone that's just on the way up, I like to, you know, check the background a little bit and see what the connections are and stuff. So if there's any chance, if you can let us know, that'll be deeply appreciated.
I tried to get Jake Shields last week, too, but I never heard back from management on that one. So we'll see.
Well, we keep trying.
But anyway, till next week, hasta la vista. Catch you later.
Okay, right, let's enjoy this weekend, Tom. Okay.
Okay, bet on my stars. That's what I'm saying. That's my prediction.
All right.
All right, see you later.
Good night.